Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Incomparable, number 699, January 2024.
Welcome back, everybody, to The Incomparable. I am your host, Jason Snell. This is an episode about a recent film, not this year, but at the end of last year, called Godzilla Minus One. There have been many, many Godzilla movies. I'm informed that this is the 37th of them and the 33rd by Toho. This is a Japanese movie, which I watch with subtitles because I don't speak Japanese. And people are loving it. It is doing really well in terms of word of mouth, in terms of critical acclaim, and surprisingly, in terms of international box office, especially in the United States. So I couldn't let it go by. I felt like it's having a moment, and I was really interested in seeing it and talking about it. And so here we are, and I am joined by my two pals to talk about Godzilla Minus One. There were three pals. We removed one, minus one, and we were left with Moises Chuyon. Hello.
Hi. A lot of Japanese cinema of late.
I know, right?
That it seems everybody wants to talk about.
I think you mean there will be
turns
more.
Turns out it's all real good.
There'll be more Japanese cinema in a future episode, I think, is what you mean.
Yes.
Two whole Japanese movies in theaters at the same time.
At the same time. And Monty Ashley, you heard him. He's the other plus one. Hello.
Hello. Are we critical acclaim or are we word of mouth?
We could be both or neither, but I think maybe both. We could be that. So. Godzilla Minus One, like there are, like I said, lots of Godzilla movies. Godzilla can mean a lot of things. Godzilla can mean big, you know, guys wearing rubber suits wrestling in a movie. But it also, from the very beginning, Godzilla has meant other things from the classic original film that was very much about post-war Japan and the horror of the nuclear bombings and the aftermath of that. And Shin Godzilla recently took a different take, and it was more about the nuclear disaster and the botched government reaction to that. Godzilla is not just a giant lizard who destroys things. Godzilla is also a vehicle for films, for good films, in good films like Godzilla Minus One, to talk about us, right? And our society or our feelings. And that is why I think Godzilla is worth taking seriously. And I know we live in a world where lots of things that we enjoyed as kids are now actually taken seriously, and adults make movies that take the silly premises of our youth and use them seriously to do serious things. And yet I still find myself surprised when it happens, like with Godzilla Minus One, which is a very good movie about people with a big Godzilla in it.
I want to say it's not just a human story about Godzilla, because those happen sometimes and those are pretty bad. This is a human story, but it's also a Godzilla story.
It is.
Rest assured, dear listener, Godzilla smashes Tokyo in this movie.
If you think this is sort of some sort of Merchant Ivory production where Godzilla occasionally is seen on the horizon while people have their travails, no.
Oh, I hear Godzilla's around. Yes. Oh, dear. Oh,
he's over there. No, I mean, there's real smashy that happens in this movie, but it is done judiciously at points and then leads to a grand finale where there is a lot of smashy and explodey going on. So yeah, you're going to get your money's worth, but you're also going to get the richness of caring about characters and their feelings. And I like that combination. Monty, do you like that combination?
Yeah, it ruled.
Yeah, it really did. Moises, you like that combination? You get the feelings, you get the smashy smashy giant lizard monster at once?
Yeah, I mean, as many Godzilla movies as I've seen, my expectations going in were that, well, Shin Godzilla was great, and it did what it was going to do, but if they're making another thing, they're probably not going for the same thing that did,
right.
And that probably means we're going to get some more smashing. And some more destroying, and since we're using not a modern setting like Shin Godzilla did, but going back to the post-war period, this is really Toho going, we're going to go back to the origin of the Godzilla myth and find something new and fresh and interesting to say about it.
Which you would think on one level, like, how? What is there?
Yeah.
What is there more to say? This is a property that has been mined in so many different ways. I saw Godzilla 85 in the theater, right? Like, it has been mined in so many different ways. Many of them not good. Some of them very good. But like, how? Why do it again? And this is the answer, which is you put it in a talented writer director's hands who's got something to say. And you can make a pretty great little movie. And we're in the kind of pre-spoiler zone here of maybe convincing you to see this movie before you listen to us talk about it. But like, I look, one of the things I love about genre entertainment in general is that it gets to use these pulpy, fun, wild vehicles like science fiction and fantasy and horror to explore human issues. And that's like why I love Buffy as a TV show, because it's all the horror tropes, but it's really about growing up in adolescence and all of that. And you know what's Godzilla in this movie? He's guilt. I mean, he's lots of things, but he is, in addition to being a monster, I mean, he's guilt. Guilt's a monster too. I just love that this is one of those movies. It hits me right in the sweet spot, which is it is using genre tropes. And they're cool, and it's using them well, right? Which is part, you can misfire by not using them well, but it's using them, and it's using them also to be meaningful. And like, it's magic when that happens for me. I can't be more impressed when I'm watching, I'm literally watching Godzilla fire like a nuclear beam out of his mouth. And I'm like, oh, but the feelings, right? That's the stuff.
One thing I think they do very cleverly is they don't just go back to the beginning. They go back to before the beginning. This is the first Godzilla movie I've seen that posits Godzilla existed as a creature before the bomb went off.
Yeah, known to the Odo Islanders and smaller. And then the like nuclear testing happens in the Pacific and he gets big. But that he was known before. And this, yeah, absolutely.
There's mythos stuff that going back to before the beginning, well put, that allows them to do is to leave open doors of there being weird stuff that is not explained. You don't have necessarily an inkling of how it's going to be explained in a theoretical follow-up. They're definitely doing another one after this.
How
far they have things charted out, who knows? But you're able to play the hits. Like, you get the best of both worlds. You play the hits with Godzilla. You do a lot of like massive destruction stuff. Mm-hmm. You get to
We should say no continuity, right? This is another telling of the Godzilla story. So they don't have to, have to know anything, and they get to make the decisions to show and do what they want. There's none of that overhanging it.
You don't have to preemptively have a stance on how you pronounce Ghidorah. Is it Ghidorah or Ghidorah?
Of course, at this time, Mothra would be located in the, nope, it's not.
No, none of that stuff matters. All that matters is Big G and an unsuspecting Japan that is still recovering from the war. And
in every sense of the word,
emotionally, infrastructure wise, rebuilding some semblance of civilization. there are themes of found family. The idea of comradeship, brothers in arms, that sort of thing. The restrictions that Japan was under in terms of not being allowed to hold any sort of standing military.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite things, that has been done so poorly for so long that it's gotten a bad rap is the mashup within genre, where it's this, but also this. In the first half hour, I think, or so, we begin a sequence that is, what if Jaws but Godzilla?
Mm-hmm.
What if Jaws but Godzilla, which I don't think spoils anything necessarily other than the juicy setup of, that is one thing among various things packed into the whole movie.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the whole thing. That's not the whole concept. That's just one aspect of the whole thing that they're doing here. And they really did put all of the energy and talent into putting something together that's fantastic, including a really great central performance by a guy who is not only just a generally well-known Japanese actor, but he's also a superstar seiyuu, Japanese animation voice actor.
Really?
From Your Name, from Arrietty, from Summer Wars. He has worked on Miyazaki movies, Mamoru Hosoda movies, Makoto Shinkai movies, all of the big anime names. This guy has been not necessarily the lead in them, but he has been the lead or a major supporting part in a bunch of stuff. And it's great seeing an actor who is that well known in their home country, getting to get their spotlight.
Anything else before we fire off the spoiler horn here that we should mention for people who are hovering, should I listen? Should I go see it? You should go see it. Anything else we should say?
It's really good.
It's really good.
There's something I want to say. I'm not sure I'm going to say it now or at the end of the recording. I'm going to say it now.
Okay.
It's easy to think, oh, this is a Godzilla movie made in Japan. That's why it's like the original Godzilla, not like the American movies where Godzilla just punches King Kong. I just want to say briefly, there are a bunch of Japanese movies where Godzilla just punches another guy in a rubber suit.
Yeah.
We didn't invent that. So it's not good because it's Japanese. It's good because it's a really good Japanese movie.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah, it's focused on the Japanese-ness of the story and not the, okay, so what are we going to do now? And how are we going to iterate on the same formula that we've been doing dozens of times?
All right, I'm firing off the spoiler horn right now. And go see Godzilla Minus One. But now we're going to talk about it.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Okay, so this movie begins at the close to the end, but not the end of World War II, and our main character, Shikishima, is a pilot, and he lands on Odo Island, and the mechanic Tachibana is like, "Hey, good landing, because this is a crappy place to land a plane." But then later is like, so about your kamikaze plane, it seems fine, which it's said in such a basic way, but, as a viewer, you're like, oh, right. So he was supposed to fly a suicide mission and he didn't want to. So he landed on Odo Island and told them that he was having mechanical problems, but he obviously isn't. And so there's this whole, from the get-go, right? It's like, is he a coward? The war is almost over. Is he smart? because he's is he selfish? Like all of these questions of you're fighting a losing war. Do you sacrifice yourself? Are you a failure if you don't? It's immediately put into question. Like and it's very kind of brooding and questionable. And then Godzilla appears in the night, and they like turn on the lights. It's Godzilla, and begins to destroy everything and kill everyone. And they tell Shikishima, "Go to your plane and fire off the big gun."
At this point, it's a small Godzilla,
yes,
on the scale of Godzillas, but it's a very big Godzilla on the scale of these are human people trying to deal with him.
Every
Godzilla movie, you're like, how big is Godzilla going to be? You don't know he's going to be bigger when you see him here. This is still plenty big enough to be frightening.
Well, you know, the cartoon that we watched when we were kids, I'm assuming something here, but the Godzilla cartoon was like up from the depths, 30 stories high. Was it 30 stories high?
Something like that.
This Godzilla is like 4 stories high, 5 stories high. It is a big monster.
It's not a starter Godzilla.
Colossal. It is, yes.
But a starter Godzilla is still a Godzilla.
And terrifying. So they turn on the lights. The Godzilla's there. It's rampaging. He runs over and hides and ducks and finally gets in his plane. And his hands are shaking. And he cannot pull the trigger. And
this is what he should feel guilty about the whole movie. He does feel guilty about not being a kamikaze pilot. He should feel guilty about not shooting.
Yeah, although
I think that's very relevant right at the end of the movie, the difference between those two things.
I think it's interesting, though, that you could argue, having seen the powerful healing and regenerative powers, there's a moment later in the movie where he uses a big gun to shoot Godzilla and it does nothing, where I kind of wanted to be like, see? It wouldn't have mattered. But we don't know. Maybe little Godzilla could have gotten cut in half. I doubt it. But he doesn't pull the trigger at all, and it kills all but Tachibana. All the other guys on the island are dead. And Tachibana, the next morning, is like, you are a coward, and you're the reason everybody died.
Yeah, I think it sells by the end of the movie that even firing that big gun at early stage Godzilla would not really have done much. I mean, the question is whether the nuclear explosion is what made Godzilla the Wolverine healing factor monster that right. It is.
I think it was the blue glow, right?
The question is whether it would have had to have the healing factor to survive it, or whether the big gun would have actually done enough damage.
But we don't know, and we never know. And the truth is, he doesn't try, right? Like, he is too afraid, and so he doesn't do it, and everybody dies. So in that way, it doesn't matter, right? Which I think is one of the fascinating conflicts in this movie, is it is about, you know, it is about fighting a war that's already going to be over. So why am I sacrificing myself? You know, do I choose to fight this monster or not? What do I blame myself? Later in the movie, you get even more of this too. It's this feeling of, he gets accused when he goes back home of being a coward, which he is, but then there's a leap to being like, if you had done this, then none of these bad things would have happened, which is not true, right? So it's this conflict of like, I didn't do my heroic deed, but in the end it wouldn't have mattered anyway. I mean, you could argue maybe those 8 guys would not have died, and so that is I think legitimate guilt he feels. But there's another thing that's hanging over this all, which is one of the things the movie really is addressing, which is everybody in Japan is like, what was that all for? Why did they ask us to fight and suffer? Like that question is here too, for that everybody's asking. It's like, why were we even put in this situation?
And for the longest time, like it was taboo to question whether like all of the kamikaze sacrifices, all of that stuff, you know, what was the point of all of it? And if anything, like that's one of the big turns here is the change in what, you know, Toho, one of their big studios, could do in depicting the way that people felt in the wake of the war. And it's something that was present in Japanese cinema in the years following World War II, but it had to be coded and disguised because it wasn't something that you openly talked about. And that's incredibly foregrounded in this movie. If anything, it's mostly about that.
Yeah. Yeah. There's definitely a feeling throughout of, And there's the moment later on where they're putting together the kind of civilian plan to fight Godzilla. That in that section, you get this feeling of like, our government betrayed us and hosted disaster upon the whole country, and so many people died. And like, there's a real anger there, and the anger isn't we lost the war. The anger is, why did we do that, right? Why did the government do this and ruin our lives? And it's a very interesting, there's a lot of, I mean, it's not, there's ambiguity there, but there's also just a lot of, room for those questions that, it surprised me. So Shikishima wakes up, He's back home. He goes to Tokyo. His neighborhood is basically destroyed. There's a neighbor lady who her parents died and her kids died. And his parents died. She is
not thrilled to see him.
No, she says, I mean, she kind of warms up later, but she's like, what, like I said before, she basically is like, oh, you're a kamikaze who didn't do his duty. You're the reason we're in this mess, which is, again, a bit of a leap, but I get the anger, and she's just feeding into his own guilt that he feels about it. It's not just survivor guilt, right? It's survivor and failing to do his job in the war guilt. And it's a complete, like, he views himself as an abject failure, and yet somehow he has to live. The neighborhood is smashed. They're basically living in rubble.
They live in rubble for a long time, by the way.
Years.
Even when the inside of their house gets cleaned up, there's still chunks of concrete right outside their house.
Somebody and ripped up paper screen for their front door. And it's like, yeah, there's a time jump of a couple of years, and it's still, they're still basically living in squalor. It's brutal.
One, it's a version of post-war Japan that you didn't see much even in Japanese cinema, because there's a certain amount of shame associated with it of, oh, right, why didn't all this stuff get cleaned up? Well, the whole country's infrastructure just ceased to exist.
Where am I going to put it?
Yeah. Like, sorry, the garbage man and his entire family line are dead. Mm-hmm. He's not been around
and
recently.
And we got lots of garbage now and nowhere to put it. Yeah, it's so that's interesting. He meets, there's a girl who they're like, stop thief, and she runs away, but she leaves this bundle and it's a baby, and he's like, so he waits around a long time and she doesn't come back, and so then he's like, I guess I could leave the baby, and he's like, no, I can't leave the baby. I'm gonna take the baby, and he walks out, and she's hiding behind a wall. She's like, hey. What took you so long?
Yeah. Everyone who sees him is like, where did you get that baby? And I have to think, in this situation, there's a lot of babies being abandoned and being picked up by random people.
Yeah. And that's what we find out, is that the lady, you know, and the baby come back to his burned out remnants of his family home. And she reveals that she's not the mother of the baby either. The dying mother of the baby said, take care of my baby. And she's like, okay. And so now we've got a very interesting, as you said, Moises, found family. It is two, kind of broken people in this broken world with a baby that they have to take care of, and the mean lady who calls him a coward next door finally is sort of like, okay, you can have my rice, but it's not for you, it's just for the baby. Make rice gruel for the baby, but not for you two ne'er-do-wells, just for the baby. Because even she's like, we got to take care of this little baby. And so what a situation to be in. This is a Godzilla movie, by the way, just saying. But there's all this is going on. He gets a job.
It pays really well.
It pays really well.
I wonder if there's a reason why it pays really well.
Yeah. Well, it turns out he breaks it to her gently, and they're not romantic at this point. Although, again, man, woman, baby.
They're not really romantic the entire movie.
No, they're not. But there's an undercurrent there that, like, are we doing this and all that? But he's too consumed with guilt. And anyway, so he breaks it to her, like, well, it is on a minesweeper. We're going to be disarming mines, and she has a moment where she's like, oh God, you're just going to die. And I think it's really interesting, because he's like, it's not a suicide mission, right? Basically, it's not a kamikaze. I'm not doing that. It's a little bit like, definitely, it's more likely than not that I won't die, right? It's like,
I think this is also where they first remind us that Japan could not have a military after World War II,
right.
Which is why civilians are out doing this.
And this is a huge part. I mean, part of the theme of this movie is definitely a frustration about because they try to stop Godzilla and they fail. And it's very clearly like part of the theme of this movie is a frustration about not being able to do something, right? Like they're like, we can't, we're not allowed, or we can't do it because of the war. And so it's frustrated characters and it's a frustrated country. But they have these guys, great joke in there where it's like, hey, they got a special boat though. Don't worry about it. They got a special boat for the minesweeping and that's where I'm going to be working. It's going to be okay. Cut to, there's this boat.
All wooden fishing trawler, basically.
It's a beat up old wood boat. But they say, the mines are magnetic. We need a wood boat because the magnetic mines don't work on wood, which is hilarious. And this is where we meet some of our other characters. We got the captain.
I love these characters.
Like these guys, we get you know, our crew of rascals, I guess.
Yeah.
But like these guys show up and the whole cast, top to bottom, are just absolutely brilliant. And as much as I love these guys, as the movie progresses, I like to think of them as, you know, my favorite, you know, cool supporting characters, but Akiko, the little girl, absolutely devastates me.
That's true.
But these guys, we've got like the science genius guy.
Yep. Doc the scientist. Grizzled old wise captain.
and the young upstart crew member who we're not sure what it is he's good at, but he's probably good at something.
He'll figure it out eventually, but he's the one who also is like, oh man, I was too young to be in the war. I wish the war had lasted longer. At which point Shigashima is like, no, you dumb kid. You do not wish the war lasted longer. Great moment, right? Where it's like, and it's figures, right? The young are like, oh, all the glory and all. And he's like, no. The war was terrible.
It's like,
not.
These guys get introduced and, you know, this is very thoroughly a Godzilla movie, but it's also, you know, an astonishing just film that Godzilla happens to be in. And I don't mean that as there wasn't enough Godzilla in this, but this is a full on like bottom to top, like cast of heavy hitter, actor types that really know what they're doing, that like the on the ground people side of this. I think the reason it sticks out to me so much as relative other Godzilla movies is that usually it's, oh, there's the one cute kid and there's the one science guy, or there are a couple of people that in theory you could sort of kind of pay attention to or care about. And in some ways Shin Godzilla did a version of that. And it, you know, it was a Godzilla movie from the guy who created Evangelion. So it was really much more about the meta stuff, but this one is really about like the story of these people, where like we meet this team and it's like we meet the other guys in Stalag 17. It's about the drama.
I would watch a whole movie of Adventures of the Wooden Minesweeping Crew, right? Like they're interesting and damaged characters, and what they do is interesting with the whole, you know, they have to clip the mines and then they shoot the mines to blow them up, or occasionally, depending on the mine, they load it up on the back of the boat to use it later or destroy it later. I don't know. Or feed to Godzilla, which is what happens. They're really all interesting. And they're all kind of types, right? It's the feisty kid and it's the science doc and it's the crusty captain, but they got some interesting moments and some interesting quirks. I enjoyed all of them. So they go out.
So, Quint and Hooper and,
they're minesweeping. They're out there and Godzilla shows up.
Uh-oh.
Oh no.
And if you're Shishima, you got to be like, this guy, why me? Why me? But that's the, one of the things.
Why does this guy have to keep showing up to my work?
One of the things that's great about Godzilla and these monsters, and that is that they're not only metaphors and for lots of things, but they're also, they are what they are, which is like a force of nature. Godzilla is like a hurricane or an earthquake or anything like that. Godzilla is so powerful that you can't, you know, you, there's nothing you can do, and it just happens. And you can say, why did it happen to me? And the answer is, look, man, Godzilla happens. It just happens. And it happened to you.
Why is he so mad at Japan specifically? Why isn't he go be mad at the United States? They dropped the bomb. It's not fair.
That's where he lives. Nobody gave him a map and and a list of all the crimes of the United States. Godzilla doesn't speak English.
He's over
there
on Odo Island, under Odo Island, doing his thing. I guess he gets over to Bikini Atoll from time to time. But anyway, so they do a... Godzilla is causing damage, and they throw mines in, and they reel them out, which is a really nice bit where they're like dropping the mine and then reeling it out, and then shooting
it's
it
Jaws.
With the big gun.
It's just Jaws.
It really is.
They just go, you know what? Let's presage this this tactic from a Steven Spielberg movie that won't come out for 30 years.
Yeah, no, it's. I mean, he, the director has said that he was very influenced by Spielberg, among others. And you can see it here. But they're like, oh, but it's okay. We call for help. The cruiser, they've taken their, so the UN is allowing them to take some of the Japanese fleet out of mothballs and use it for fighting Godzilla, basically. But they had to get permission. So like, yay, the cruiser is coming, and it is destroyed by Godzilla. Yeah. So
at this point, Godzilla is much larger than he was before.
So much larger. This is a colossal sized Godzilla.
Yeah, surely we can send some massive battle carriers at this thing. Surely this giant force of nature can just be met with more force, because we realized that was the solution to all the problems of World War II.
It's like nuking a hurricane. It just works. So what happens is, also there's a cool thing now where Godzilla has the thing where this kind of blue lightning starts at his tail and goes up his spine. And when it reaches his head, he opens his mouth and a giant nuclear heat beam comes out and causes like a mushroom cloud, basically, and destroys, in this case, the heavy cruiser. Later, he destroys big parts of Tokyo, among other things, with the same thing. So Godzilla is leveled up as well, has some new tricks. It's pretty horrifying. But guess what? Shikishima lives to fight another day and meet Godzilla more times and feel guilty about surviving a little bit more. Goes home and talks to Noriko, the surrogate mother of this baby,
the not mom,
about seeing Godzilla and, you know, some of his guilt, because that's, you know, that's some of the important stuff in the movie, right? Because he is tormented by his story and has mostly kept it to himself, but allows some of it to come out. He has a dream at one point where he is attacked by Godzilla, like he's back on the beach on Odo Island.
Boy, is this guy tormented.
He really is.
He so permanently has a bandage wrapped around his head that
from various
at the point that he doesn't have it around his head, I'm like, oh who's that guy? Oh, that's
Shikishima. No, I was always like, he's gonna get hurt again.
Yeah.
It's time for a new bandage. So now Noriko has taken a job in Ginza where things are starting starting to piece together after these 2 years where they've been living in rubble. he improves the house. So it's better. It's still, the neighborhood's still kind of a mess, but it's getting a little bit better. And she's got a job. And the lady who was super angry and suspicious at the beginning of the movie is now basically like the aunt who is going to take care of the young child when he's gone doing his minesweeping and she's working in the Ginza. So that's great. Except, you know what's going to come, which is, Godzilla has decided to attack again. And this time he's going to walk through Tokyo and attack the Ginza.
Godzilla wanted to go buy a few, you know, reasonably priced gifts for friends. Yeah. And so where else to go but Ginza? Yeah.
He needs a new plasma TV. So, and so we get an extended, very dramatic scene here where Godzilla is doing, and I love this. So I know we did a Cloverfield episode, and I really like Cloverfield because it, you know, again, it's not just about the monster, but Cloverfield's also very much a post 9/11 movie where urban destruction was really close in the minds of people. And one of the things I really like about Godzilla Minus One as well is this is not, I would say, sort of superhero level city destruction. It feels much more visceral to me. Like Godzilla is just shattering buildings and whipping his tail and just flicking his tail and destroying buildings everywhere in the Ginza.
He's doing it on purpose.
Yes. It's brutal, and he is just being deeply destructive. But we also get here a great scene where Noriko is riding, she's commuting into town on the train, and the guys are driving the train.
Godzilla loves trains. Have Godzilla, you played Rampage? He loves those things.
Godzilla wakes up and goes, you know what? I could have any number of different things to eat, but what I could really go for is some train.
A train car that displeased him, so he chucked it, and it lands on the tracks right in front of her train, so they have to stop. But of course, Godzilla's like, oh boy, throw one, it's like bait, throw one train out, get a whole train. And so he picks it up, he chomps on it, she's holding on, she drops into the water. When she's over the water, she drops out of the half ripped apart train car in order to survive. Shishima gets to Ginza because he's trying to get her because he's worried that she's going to get killed by Godzilla. And he finds her, and her hair is still wet. Her clothes seem dry, but like, go with it, whatever. But Godzilla is being attacked and attacking. And there's a moment where Godzilla charges up, blasts out his nuclear heat ray, enormous fireball and explosion. This is a very much a reminiscent of a nuclear blast kind of thing that's happening here. And she pushes Shikishima into an alley right before she is blown away by the shockwave in a very visceral scene where all the people and debris are blown way back by the shockwave. And then when the shockwave is done and there's the vacuum in the center, everything blows the other way for double damage, essentially. And he comes out of the alleyway and can't find her everywhere, and there's nobody around. And basically this whole portion of Tokyo has been completely leveled. It is brutal.
For the sake of impact, what makes this land so heavily and so much better for me, I mean, I tried searching my memory and thinking of a you know, giant monster attacking a city thing that landed as profoundly with me as this did, and I think it was that we saw destroyed Tokyo and then we saw rebuilt Tokyo.
Yeah.
And then Godzilla took us back to destroyed Tokyo.
This is the part they fixed.
Just really hurt.
Yeah.
Like, it felt like I knew this city in ways that I've never been to Japan. I don't know Tokyo. As many times as I've seen it in as many movies, as many times as I've seen Godzilla step on it.
Right.
I have but never.
It's literally, we spent 2 years fixing this thing up, but we got it fixed. And Godzilla's like, nah. Just, I destroyed it again. Like, come on, man. Oh, come
on. Godzilla's mad.
He is.
Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than Luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
We shouldn't step past what we're meant to think is the death of Noriko.
Yes, yeah.
I think it's very effective that she's gone. Very effective. I mean, for me, it was the, oh, wow, what a loss. But at the same time, I went, they had to fridge the lady. They had to fridge the not wife, not mom. Mm. What? No. Okay. All right, well, we'll see. We'll see. It's possible that she survived, as improbably as they set it up. But to an extent,
I don't see how she survived that. I'm just going to say that right
now. That's the thing is I went, it would be such a cop-out for them to bring her back because it seems almost impossible.
Yes.
Actually, no, it is beyond impossible that she survived that.
There's no way.
But when they bring her back, he could really use a break at that point. Yeah, I don't mind it.
Yeah, that's why I forgave it. I was like, you know what? Ordinarily, no. But this guy's been through a lot. He's been through literally everything three times. I'm going to give him this one.
Give him this one. Exactly right. So a plan is put into place. The civilians are going to do a plan. And guess what cagey scientist has decided to just gin up a little plan for how you could beat Godzilla. It's the doc from the boat.
Sure.
He's got a big idea. I mean, he is playing the role of scientist in Godzilla movie. It is his job to come up with a plan to kill Godzilla. That is the bit. That is the...
It doesn't matter if it's a good plan or not. No. It probably isn't. The first three plans always fail, but we need a plan.
And
his name is not Dr. Sarazawa, but he is the designated Sarazawa of this movie.
Yeah, so
he is the guy who's going to give us our science solution.
I really like... So he's like, okay, we can't... We saw him regenerate. That's not going to work. So what we're going to do... And it's very clever. He's like, we're gonna do bubbles around him. The bubbles mean he loses his buoyancy. We're going to do this over a trench. We're going to weigh down in the trench. The pressure's going to crush him.
I like this plan so far.
Yeah. And they're like, okay. And he's got like a little demo where there's like a little model Godzilla and there are bubbles around it and he falls to the bottom and like, aha. And everybody, and then in a, I think what says a lot about understanding humanity and the dynamics of humanity, the people in the audience are like, so is this, can you guarantee that this will work? And the scientist is like, well, I mean, I can't guarantee it. It's worth a shot. Like, the pressure's really bad. It's going to crush him. Normal animals would get completely crushed if they're sent from the top to the bottom in that small amount of time. And they're like, so he's going to die, right? And he's like, look, I make no guarantees, which one, it feels like he's seen Godzilla movies. He knows that the first plan doesn't work. But two, I just enjoy that. People want reassurance. And he's like, I have no reassurance for you. We're just trying something here. And he's like, no. I got plan B. I've got the guy from the inflatable raft company.
This is a dumb part of the plan.
Oh, so dumb. Look, when your antecedent in the original movie is the oxygen destroyer, I was like, let's hear what the inflatable guy has to say.
So the idea is that we sink him to the bottom. Now he's stuck on the bottom, right? In all that pressure. If he wants to get Tokyo, he's going to have to walk all that way. Then what do? We float him back up to the top right away.
Well, I think
that's the part I think is a bad part.
So we give him the bends, real bad.
Yeah, well,
bends.
That's what it is. So first off, I really enjoy the fact that the inflatable company, they have their own little uniform. And it's like the guy, the CEO, and like five guys who work for him. And they're all there in their little blue policeman's uniforms, being like, we're going to do this. It's going to be great. Monty, I think the premise is that because they say, well, he lives down there. Why would this kill him? And they're like, it's the pressure difference that kills him. The fast drop. The idea that once he's down there, if he's still alive, he's going to be fine because he actually is from down there. So they're like, but then we yank him back to the surface and now he's got the bends. So he's been crushed by the pressure. Now he's going to be given the bends. It's going to be really bad for him. Also, at several points, people are like, hey, can you assure us this one will work? And the doc's like, no, I can't. I kept wanting him to say, guys, we've never seen Godzilla before. Yeah. We know nothing about his biology. We're just guessing based on other animals. We don't, and none of them have a heat ray. So we don't know how this works. We're just trying. But I do love, and this reminds me of the COVID era, people like, hey, scientists, can you give us certainty? And the scientists are like, no.
Well, here's my problem with the plan is that he's not down at the bottom for long enough.
Right.
I watched this scientific documentary called Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny.
Yes.
And they said that if you dive, you can go deep and just stay there for 15 minutes and come right back up and you don't get the bends at all.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. Uh-huh. Well, maybe they should time it a little bit better. You're right. But anyway, they got a solid plan A, they got a solid plan B, but Shikishima would like a plan C. So he volunteers and they find this cool plane that was just...
You just watch. I'm going to be a kamikaze after all.
Yeah. So they find this
I'll
cool plane.
I'll show them.
They find this cool plane. that was never put into service because the war ended. And
it's legit a cool plane, though.
Yeah,
like,
it
that's
is.
The
and
thing.
He says, look, what I'm going to do is I'm going to fly the plane because I want a chance to be a hero because I failed in my mission in the war. And I'm going to shoot at Godzilla and I'm going to lead him to the thing. Like, okay, great. It must be Tachibana who fixes this plane, which is very funny because he can't find him anywhere. And there's that scene where he goes to the records and they're like, we can't find him. And I'm begging you. And the guy's like, well, I don't know what to tell you, man. I looked and
here, let me check on my computer. What's a computer? I don't know. I just made it up.
I can't
begging
find
was
him.
So Japanese, by the way. I love mm-hmm. that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really good. It is funny though. Cause it's like Godzilla at this point, Godzilla has been spotted. He is headed for Tokyo. He will be there in less than a week. And they're like, well, we got to have this plane. And he's like, I must have the one mechanic who knows my shame. And they're like, we can't find him. And he's like, no other mechanic will do. It's like, guy, we really need to work on that plane now. We can't wait for your mechanic to come, but it's fine. It's a movie. The mechanic does come. He sends letters to everybody who is where he was stationed before he went to the island, and they do get to him, and he comes to Shikishima's house and punches him and ties him up, and he's like, what? You liar. You said that it was my fault. And he's like, yeah, I just said that to get you here. I need you to fix a plane for me.
It worked.
It totally did work, although, you know, and he gets beat up, which he doesn't mind.
You
he feels
son
very
of a
guilty.
Gun, I'm in.
So yep. They show him the plane, and Shikishima is like, Shikishima comes back with his guys, and they look at the plane, and they're like, yeah, we can fix the plane. But Shikishima's idea that Tachibana is going to put into service is, I don't just want the guns, I want big bombs. Because he says, I saw what happened when we blew up inside Godzilla, like in his mouth, and that hurt him. So if we do a big enough bomb down his throat, I think we can get them. So that's essentially his plan C. But also part of that is I get to die an honorable death doing a kamikaze run on Godzilla, since I failed to do that because I was cowardly during the war. And this brings us to an interesting point, because as they're showing him the plane before this all goes on, they show him the plane. They show him the seat that has a prominent warning label on the back of the seat in German. And I'm like, oh, that's an ejector seat.
Yes, it is.
and the movie's like,
Zoom in on the thing you pull in.
Yeah, and he's like, oh, well, here's how you arm the bomb. And then they pull away and they show them talking briefly and they cut away. And I'm like, well, yeah, he just told him how to get out in the ejector seat. And the movie wants us to believe that he's going to kill himself. And I thought, you know what? I love this movie, but I think it would have been more effective if Tachibana said, look, there's an ejector seat. Here's how you use it. And have Shikishima be like resistant, like, no, you don't understand. He's like, listen here. In a flashback later, when this is revealed, big reveal, it's an ejector seat. He says, you should live. Don't kill yourself. That's stupid. Yeah. I wish it had been more, not a surprise, but like the question is, will he pull the lever or not? Instead of, what? There was an ejector seat all along. Cause that part, I'm like, no,
completely agree.
It's really clear.
Completely agree. Like that's where the actual tension would have been.
Yeah, right? Because then the arc of you were not mad at you for not kamikazing yourself, we're mad at you for not shooting comes really clean if he has a moment in the cockpit where he's like, I could fly in and kill him, or I could do this. I choose to do this now.
Right.
But I think his plan always was to eject once they put the ejector seat in.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. I felt like there would have been better tension in the movie if it didn't try to pretend that we didn't know there was an ejector seat, and instead sort of left it as unclear whether Shikishima would choose. Yeah. I mean, of course he's going to eject, but I like the idea of thinking like this guy who's been miserable for the whole movie of like, okay, here's your glorious kamikaze moment, but is that what you really want? Right. But that they don't really talk about that.
They even foreshadowed it before Tachibana, because that general said, we're not going to have kamikaze pilots anymore. We're putting ejector seats in our planes.
And
he looks straight at the camera and winks.
That is, by the way, a great moment. That talk about a repudiation of Imperial Japan and showing all the people who are like, feel betrayed. They're like, this government had no value on our lives, not general human lives, like our lives. They didn't care if we died. in all of these things that they did, they considered our lives valueless. And we're not going to do it like that anymore. And I'm like, damn, that's like, whew, wow. And that's the pep talk before they go out and fight Godzilla is like, they're like, you're asking us to sacrifice ourselves. And they're like, no, we are not asking you to sacrifice yourselves. We want everyone to come back from this. That's not what we're doing here. That's what it's quite a scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, building the value of, look, we are the ones who survived the war, and the Japan that will exist for generations to come relies on all of us actually rebuilding the country because it's not done yet. And as much as we did, look at how quickly it got undone.
And that's what they say to the kid, too. He wants to come, and they're like, and his arm is, you know, is broken or whatever from the last mission. And they're like, kid,
no, stupid,
the future belongs to you. We're doing this for you. And it is a beautiful moment because it's really them saying, you don't put yourself in danger here. We're going to go do this so that you can live in the world that we're going to help create by beating Godzilla, right? Like, come on, snap out of it. It's nice. I like it.
And then we go into like the multi-tiered battle sequence that is like two different battles of Hoth happening simultaneously.
Yeah. So we have so Godzilla's coming. It's a very funny moment too, where they're like, Godzilla's in the harbor. This is unexpected. Everybody get to their boats. And the guys are at their boat and they're all looking around talking to each other. And they're like, everybody get to their boats. And they're looking around talking to each other. It's like, guys, they mean you. Get in your boats, guys. So they get in the boats and they're going to do their plan. So, but Godzilla's too far in now. So Shikishima, he launches in his super fast, cool, awesome plane and is zipping around Godzilla, making him mad and shooting him. And Godzilla's like trying to grab him and he's zipping around like he's like a mosquito that Godzilla just can't get.
The plane is built backwards. It's weird.
Yeah. Yeah. It's got the big propeller in the back.
Yeah.
Look, you know, that's just cool. How T-wings are built.
It's cool. Right. So so he lures Godzilla back out into the water to this trench. I think it's also hilarious that although they're in very deep water, Godzilla frequently looks like he's just standing in a wading pool. I guess it's like the proverbial duck, right? He's doing a lot of work under the surface to tread water. And he can do that.
Yeah, how does he swim exactly? He is not built to be in water, but he lives in the water.
He may have some buoyancy, or he's just really good at dog paddling, or you know, kicking under the surface. I don't know, but they're like he's out in the deep trench there, but it looks like he's standing in 10 feet of water. Anyway, he gets lured by Shikishima out into the water, and then it's like, oh, the doc is like, yeah, here we go, my Freon gas canister plan. So they do this thing where they're dropping out the gas canisters, and the two boats kind of like come in a circle, and there's a moment where it felt kind of pointless and gratuitous, but it was awesome, where the two boats come together, and they're like, there will be some damage, as the two boats rub against each other and then cross. And the idea is they're like lassoing this strand of wire with of cables with the it's got the Freon gas canisters and it's got the inflatables, and they're gonna lasso them around Godzilla, and then the bubbles come out and he drops to the floor. So they do all this and there's damage, and there's the dummy ships that he heat rays, but there's nobody even there. There's like the ropes tied on the steering wheel, and it's like just to get him, because then he has to recharge. And the bubbles come out. And he drops like a rock.
It worked perfectly.
And they're like, oh, 1,000 meters, 1,200 meters, 1,800 meters. Ah, we did it. And then there's the whole like, oh, no. Oh, no. He's still not dead. So they're like, inflate the things. And they're going to bring him back up. And the inflatable things work. And he comes back up. But he gets stuck like 800 meters down. And so we get our, in what is a silly moment, all of the tugboats come and pull the two boats apart in order to raise Godzilla to the surface, including the kid.
Hey,
is leading the
tugboat
fleet.
It wasn't silly when they did it in Dunkirk.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's what's going on.
But
here,
that was
sure.
Based on something that actually happened.
Actually happened. Yeah, so it's cool. A little bit silly, but the kid
gets to be in the fight he wanted to.
He does.
It's fun.
He does. So the tugboats, humble.
Yeah, Jason, why don't you just let the kid fight?
No,
huh?
He shouldn't. He should stay back home and plan for the 21st century.
What 21st century? If he doesn't get there, there's going to be no 21st century, Jason.
Exactly. Right. Godzilla will eat the 21st century. So they pull the tugboats, pull the things apart. Godzilla comes up. Godzilla is very angry and is going to charge up his heat ray and blow everybody up. But Shikishima has been circling in his plane. This is his moment. And we're like, oh no, he's going to kill himself, except it's very obvious that he's going to eject. And he does the thing where he comes around and he arms the bomb. He pulls the lever. The plane goes into Godzilla's mouth. There's a big bang. It looks like his head is blown off, basically. And they're like, oh, Shikishima, no. And then they're like, oh, parachute. And he's actually okay. Except he's very close to Godzilla, whose body is breaking apart, and the laser death beam rays are radiating out in all directions. Fortunately, none of the...
It looks so cool.
It does. I was a little worried that Shikishima was just going to get vaporized in one of the little rays that comes out. But yeah, as Godzilla kind of crumbles away and depowers and falls to the ocean floor,
and it's
victory.
It's a destruction of the giant monster thing that is akin to, you know, like beating the last boss in some big epic video game or something, but it totally works. It feels earned. It feels like a triumph.
Yeah. It's like a Death Star run. It's really well done. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just so satisfying what happens. You're like, yes, he did it. He shot and he killed it. It's really good. Mm-hmm. It's very, very satisfying.
It is. The only part of it is like, they're like, oh, but we fooled you. You thought that he died, but no. And I'm like, guys, you didn't fool me.
We didn't think he died.
It's very clear that he ejected, but it's okay. All right, fine. I'll give you that.
Oh, I thought you meant Godzilla. I didn't think Godzilla
died. Oh, well, Godzilla, I mean, it doesn't matter, but yeah, of course
Godzilla
not.
Did not eject.
So Godzilla also did not eject. Wouldn't that have been something? So, hooray. Then things get weird, because we had a cutaway where the Sumiko, the auntie who's taking care of Akiko, the little kid, gets a telegram, and we don't see what it is. And then this whole fight happens. And you're like, oh boy, that telegram.
The telegram's from Godzilla. I am the girl's real father.
I'm coming. I just wanted to warn you that I'm coming. Damn it, Godzilla.
I'm coming for my kid.
Shikishima, I always see you, so I hope you're there. So, no, the telegram is, we're going to have the mega happy ending of Godzilla Minus One, because Noriko somehow didn't die and is in a hospital. And I don't know how she didn't die, but then she seemed to be there for a while, but maybe she's unconscious and they didn't know who she was because she was one of the many, many, many victims in the Ginza that day. But regardless, she's got like a bandage over her eye, and she's like, her arm is in a thing. Like, she's obviously very damaged.
And there's a thing on her neck.
And there's like a dark thing on her neck that is not explained. And it's like, I guess it's bad. And I read an article where they talked to the director about it. And he said, well, I gave you the mega happy ending, but I wanted it to be like, or is she, right? Like, or is there, you know, she's back, but it's not that she's not damaged. And I've seen lots of theories on the internet that are like, oh, it means that she's got radiation poisoning, or she's got a Godzilla something or other, and it's like, or it's just the movie saying it's not as easy as it maybe seems it is. It's a little bit bittersweet what happens here, but it is, again, as we said earlier, given how brutal that explosion was, it does sort of strain credulity that she's alive. But you know, give it to him, Shikishima's kind of earned it. And then the last shot of the movie is a piece of Godzilla's body that exploded and was there is falling in the ocean, and it begins to bubble as if regenerating. Dun, dun, dun. Godzilla will return in, or, you know, another movie at some
Godzilla
point.
Godzilla Minus Two.
Minus Two. And that is Godzilla Minus One, a movie that I went in knowing nothing about it other than that it was good and that it had lots of sort of feelings and things in it. And the first part of the movie, I'm like, wow, like, what if you made a Godzilla movie where Godzilla's barely in it? The second half of the movie, Godzilla's in it a lot. Like, this is absolutely a Godzilla movie. The beauty of it, though, is that it is also a movie about characters, and there are fun characters, but there's also tormented characters who are dealing with real guilt. And Shikishima feels enormous guilt about his actions during the war, but also you have all the people in Japan who feel betrayed and their whole country was destroyed and they felt like they weren't valued by their government. There's a real, you get that real sense of the government betrayed us in doing this war, and the way they did the war, and the fact that there were kamikazes. Like, this is devaluing life. And so there's that real anger there. And then there's this feeling of powerlessness that before Godzilla, all of us are powerless. He is a force of nature, but also their feeling of like having their Navy taken away from them, so they can't even defend themselves. And and that's obviously frustrating. Like, all of that stuff is in here. It is a movie that manages to be a real, impressive, good Godzilla movie while also having all of those other things. I think it's a pretty neat trick to be, again, not the Merchant Ivory movie where Godzilla's seen on the horizon occasionally, but like a real Godzilla movie with real human beings and feelings and stuff.
Your constant return to Merchant Ivory Godzilla movie makes me think that there's a spec script on Jason's hard drive somewhere.
Yeah.
And that's been there for a long time.
It's the Godzilla patient.
If you had told me going into 2023, the two of the most deeply introspective and richly layered movie experiences I would have that year were a Barbie movie and a Godzilla movie, I don't know that I would have believed you.
Yeah.
What is the one that Godzilla is minus? Explain the title to me.
There were like rumors that the script was somehow like partially inspired by a book called Minus Zero. And I don't know, it comes off to me like, you know, why did all of the Hideaki Anno movies, why did it have to be Shin Godzilla, Shin Ultraman, Shin Kamen Rider? Sometimes the titles just evoke something and don't actually mean something.
I have two theories, but they're just BS theories that I made up, but I'll share them now because it's a podcast, right? And Monty, you asked.
Yeah, I did.
One is that this is a reset of telling a Godzilla story, and it starts before the beginning. And so you're going back not just to zero, but to minus one, and saying like, there's like an original sin here, which is during the war. And there's that original smaller Godzilla, and what happens with Shikishima. So that the minus one is sort of like it's even before it starts. That's where the movie begins. It's more than just a reset. It's like a pre-reset. My other thought is it's like a music minus one thing, which I went into it thinking where it's like almost like the premise is, let's make a good movie. What if we made a great Godzilla movie without Godzilla, essentially? And that's not what it is, but that there's something like that, which is it's about the spaces around Godzilla. Like, because, you know, a music minus one where it's like you take the drum track away from a song and then you can play along on the drums. I was thinking that might be one of the things they're going for here, is the idea that this is, let's make a movie that stands on its own as a movie about people. If you remove Godzilla from it, you've got a real human drama. And then we put Godzilla in it and he's banging around. I don't know. Those are my BS title.
I like the first one. Okay. Instead of Godzilla 1 or Godzilla 0, it's Godzilla minus one. Yeah.
Right? Like it's before the before.
I want to quickly shout out the budget for this movie, which was $15 million. 1-5.
It looks really good.
It looks so good. There are movies that came out the year that cost $200 million to make that don't look as good as this movie. It is astonishing what they did.
The Godzilla in it, too, it looks like... I mean, like, I saw somebody wrote, like, it was he's got that kind of cat face from the 70s Godzilla. And I was like, that's my knowledge of Godzilla, is like, when I saw this Godzilla, I mean, he's really scaly and stuff. And when he swims, you get the little spikes up, and it is very Jaws-like. But when you see his face, I'm like, hey, it's Godzilla, right? Like, it is, and he doesn't feel, I mean, it's not a all CGI reinvention of Godzilla. It is... It doesn't feel cheesy, I would say, but like they didn't spend a lot of money on it, but it looks good and he's super scary and menacing, and the rest of the movie looks great too, right? Like the all those scenes of Tokyo being devastated and people living in the squalor, that stuff looks great. The stuff on the island looks great. Like it's amazing that it costs what it costs, because it looks great.
It sells the devastation. It, you know, the loads and loads of visual effects, in no way come off like the, you know, rushed Marvel post-production kind of look. Yeah.
It's in the Bake Off, I think, by the way. Yeah, it's in the Bake Off for the Academy Awards, which is along with a lot of movies that cost a lot of money.
Yeah.
And that tells you something, because what gets I believe, if our friend Todd were here, he could tell us, but I believe what gets selected for the Bake Off, I mean, it's that is an award of itself, because you made the cut to be considered for an Academy Award nomination. And it's like that, these are not cheesy effects. These are effects that are to be taken seriously. It's really remarkable.
Fukui-san.
Hi, Dozo.
While you were both talking about how much they did with so little money, I looked things up, and so the title apparently is in reference to the country having been devastated by World War II, and Godzilla as a new threat, bringing the country into the minus. They were brought to zero by the war, yeah, and Godzilla brought them lower than zero.
Lower than zero. That's a good one.
Oh, I love it.
That's a good one too. That's good. I mean, that goes to that visceral thing that we talked about
stadium
earlier, where it's like, we've lived for 2 years in squalor, but at least the Ginza's coming along. Godzilla shows up in the Ginza and completely destroys it. Like, come on, man.
Well, at least we got that really nice mall. Oh, the mall no longer exists.
No. I enjoy the scene where the guy is doing the play-by-play for the radio from the rooftop. And he's just, Godzilla's destroying all the buildings around him, and he seems unfazed. And he's like, oh, he's destroyed another building. He's destroyed another building. He's coming this way. He's going right past us. And I'm like, dude, you're on a building. And then Godzilla just smashes that building, and they fall, and the whole side of the building falls down to the street. And I'm like, that was actually very enjoyable. Like, you guys are in the carnage, right? And they're like, not even thinking about it. There's a lot of really nice details in this movie.
Yeah, they really do a good job of the tone, where when you see Godzilla smashing Tokyo, you are simultaneously thinking, oh no, not Tokyo. Yeah. Godzilla, how could you? But you're also thinking, yeah, get him, Godzilla, smash that thing.
Yeah, seriously. I feel like that's always the thing with these movies, right? Is the destruction is a spectacle. If the destruction was repulsive, they wouldn't do it. The destruction is a spectacle that's interesting. And then also you can hold in your heart the same thing, which is, this is a horrible thing being visited on people whose country has already been smashed. And now a monster is there. And yeah, it's not just them. I mean, when we talk a lot about Godzilla being, you know, metaphorical for the smashing of Japan in World War II and the nuclear bombings, and here it's like, oh, that already happened. He's just gonna do it again. It's like, oh, and yeah, it's so well done, and you really feel it. But it is,
yeah,
it is also the spectacle of, like, that flick of the I just love it when he flicks the tail. There's a moment where, in one of his appearances, is it on the island, he finally has a moment where, in this little Godzilla, where he finally just, like, flicks his tail, and the one building on the island is just bloop, gone. I'm like, dang. Yeah, just don't mess with Godzilla.
And I mean, to be clear, it's not like, oh, good, the suffering of people. I'm so happy that people are suffering.
No, you see the horror of it. That's part of it.
Yeah, it's that what is being depicted is really selling the amount of loss and the motivation of the characters,
yeah,
and why this like minus plus plus max devastation of Ginza and ships and everything, considering everything that Japan's gone through, that in no way are you looking at Godzilla going, oh, poor guy.
No, so
he just needs a little island to hang out on.
This is not a friendly Godzilla with his nephew Godzuki, who is going to help a bunch of people on the Greenpeace Explorer. That is not this Godzilla. He's a force of nature, and he's destructive, and it's good that they kill him at the end, you know, except not, but they do mostly, but yeah, asterisk. And we'll take you back, Moises, you were there. The Man of Steel episode, like,
yes,
I hate movies that show things like urban destruction, like it's just fun
with no impact.
Yeah, it's like, oh, this is fun, and you know, did people die? Probably, but who cares? Whatever, it's fun, and at no point during the spectacle of Godzilla destroying Ginza do I feel like it's not horrible, right? Like,
yeah.
It is horrible that it's happening. It is spectacular, and it's just a movie, so it's okay. But, like, the whole point is that it's horrible. it's not fun. It's not a fun romp where he destroys a bunch of buildings. It's a natural disaster, essentially.
It's a natural disaster that's coming back next week. What are you going to do about it?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've always felt like the kaiju movies are like disaster movies. Like, and that's why I like Cloverfield, is it's essentially a disaster movie. Except the disaster is a giant monster. But in the end, it's about testing people by putting them in adversity because some terrible disaster happened. And how do you get out of it? If you can survive it, because that's all you can do. You're powerless. Like the people in this, you feel powerless to do anything other than try to survive, which is, of course, goes back to the core of Shikishima's guilt, because all he did was try to not get killed, but it means he's a coward.
Yeah. That Man of Steel episode, during which Jason, reminding me to actually think about the movie made me hate it more and more progressively, where, you know, I started out going, yeah, you know, it was a movie, whatever. It was a theme park ride. What bothered me the most about it, and continues to bother me about movies that have mass destruction as a plot point, is stuff like Man of Steel that makes it feel like the city that you're seeing devastated, you know, it's a video game town. People don't live here.
Yeah.
Humans don't live here.
It doesn't matter.
This is, who cares?
And Tokyo in this movie.
A character as much as Godzilla.
Absolutely. People live there, and absolutely, this destruction is awful and setting the country back when it's just trying to dig out of the destruction of the war. And so, like, yeah, it's amazing stuff. It's really fun on one level as a movie spectacle, but, like, not for a moment do you not know that this is horrible urban destruction. Like, and the movie, like, it's just so well done. I mean, I know I've said that a bunch of times now, but it's just so well done of being a Godzilla movie where you're like, yeah, there's a big monster. He runs around, he blows stuff up. Yeah, that absolutely happens. And also being a movie that is about adults having complex feelings and guilt and stress and feelings of betrayal and abandonment. And, like, what a special gift it is to have all that wrapped up in one movie, I say. Plus, what an atomic
breath of fresh air.
Oh,
shut it down. We're not topping that.
Boom. All right. That brings us to the end of our discussion of Godzilla Minus One. And I would like to thank my panelists for being here. Monty, Ashley, thank you. You can be my science doc any day.
And now the original Godzilla soundtrack swells up as my final words are spoken.
Were those the final words, or are they coming?
This is our preference, because, you know, we didn't talk about it, but they used the score from the original Godzilla movie so well in this Godzilla movie.
Yeah, it's good. It's very, very, the score is on point. You're right. And I don't know. Is he the kid who just wants to prove himself? I don't know. It's Moises Chuyon. Thank you.
I'm going to find more improbable ways to attach propellers to planes and just wait for the sequel.
Fantastic. And thanks to you for listening, you listener out there, to this episode of The Incomparable. We will see you next time.